When people teach this, poor Jesus, oh, he's, look at how they're treating him. It's so bad, it's so terrible. And they're trying to drum up sympathy. Well, it is bad, it is terrible, and I'm not really super critical. And somebody's always trying to teach the word. God bless them, you know, unless they're a heretic. But I think it's a little bit misguided. I don't think the idea here is to try to drum up sympathy for Jesus. This is the greatest victory of all time. This is why Jesus came to earth. This is the salvation of mankind. The greatest victory. What's second place? I mean, think about that. I'll give you a couple options. David over Goliath. Pretty notable. It can save mankind. What are we going to say? One of the greatest achievements in, well, victory of miracle on ice. It kind of misses. It's almost like if we compare anything to this victory, it's almost blasphemous at first blush. And I think it is. This is such a victory. And this is what I want to, I'm just going to go through the facts. I think John's given us just the facts. Okay, this happened, and this happened, and this happened. And it's all towards your and my redemption. And so let's look at it that way. When Jesus had spoken these words, what words? John chapter 17, the high priestly prayer, and everything that went before it, choice ground. Like I say, every time we were in one of these chapters, I'm thinking, I may never get here again. If it's 10 years from now, I'll be 74. Maybe dead. I don't know. Will I be teaching at 74? I don't know that those are the things I concern myself with. I think in 74, I think we'll be 8 years into the kingdom age, or we'll be in the time of Jacob's trouble, or we'll be past the rapture. We will have a Bible study, and John can teach it, okay? That'll be wonderful, you know? And that's what I'm thinking, you know, in terms of that we may be, this is, might be the last time. I don't know that. So he spoke these words. He went forth with the disciple over the book Kidron, which was a garden, into which he entered and his disciples. Now many have taken in hand to compare. Okay, we have Adam in the garden. Now we have the last Adam in a garden also. And they compare the fall with the redemption. Oh, that's choice. That, I'm not going to take that in hand, and I'm not going to try to do anything with that, okay? I'm just going to tell you that that's a very fruitful exercise you might do on your own. Judas also, which betrayed him, knew the place, for Jesus oftentimes was sorted thither with his disciples. Judas then, having received a band of men in office from the chief priests and Pharisees, came thither with lanterns and torches and weapons. I'm going to point out a few inconsistencies with. Okay, like for instance, on a feast day, you can't carry weapons. That's illegal. Not Romans, but the Jewish authorities can. There's a lot of things. There's six trials that Jesus goes through. All of them are kangaroo courts. All of them are obviously unjust. They convict an innocent man, obviously. But they're all got that element of the justice is set aside. We're going to condemn this guilty, no good lawbreaker before we even hear. He doesn't have a chance to speak for himself. It's kind of like in countries that don't have a high premium on justice, they'll drag you into a place and basically torture you and get you to confess to, okay, what have you done? Oh, who are your cronies? Who are your accomplices? And this kind of has that flavor. Now, jurisprudence in that time among the Jews is very, very highly, it's really a great system. We would do well to imitate, but they set all the rules aside, and they have this, as I say, kangaroo court, trusting that you know what that means. But of course you do, but there's others who will listen to this later on, and they might not, okay? So if I ever talk down to you, forgive me, because I know you're very bright people, but there's others who might not be quite as clever as you. So Judas knew the place. Now he takes all these people with him. Why? He's not, sin will make you stupid. I said that before. We looked at the life of Saul on Wednesday nights. Saul does some very crazy, stupid things. He's not thinking really great. Neither is Judas. One, he's thinking that Jesus is going to put up a fight, so we're going to meet him with overwhelming force. He overestimates Jesus' resistance. He underestimates Jesus' power. If Jesus wanted to put up a fight, how many guards do you show up with? How ridiculous is that? So here they are, there's hundreds, perhaps hundreds, okay? Most people think. It says the word multitude, and I think three synoptic gospels. I think it's three times it uses the word multitude. Here it's a band of men. Jesus, therefore, knowing all things that should come upon him, went forth and said unto them, "Who seek ye?" Is he cowering in the shadows? Our Savior does not play hide and seek. He says, if you seek for me, I will be found of you, if you seek for me with all your heart. Now, I'm not playing your little games, but I mean, if you if you want to find me, you can find me. Here, he's not cowering. They come into the garden, and he comes out. Who are you looking for? Puts it right on them. He wants them to announce their evil intention, and he's focusing, in my thinking, on the 12. Nobody's getting arrested today except me. And that's how the shepherd is starting to lay down his life for the sheep. Whom seek ye? They answered him, Jesus of Nazareth. That's very interesting to me. Jesus the carpenter? Certainly. Jesus the rabbi? Of course. Jesus the Christ? Certainly not. They're not going to use that. Jesus of Nazareth. It's a little dump town, and it's kind of a negative. It's a very humbling name, appellation to take upon yourself. And that's what he went by. You know, in Muslim countries, followers of Jesus are called, Nazarenes, and they use that the letter N to mark houses and stuff that, like, for, okay, a Christian, let's say, a follower of Jesus. And it's funny to me, they still use the letter N, their version of it. And that means, okay, this is ripe for persecution, and if you want to, mayhem, they still designate people that way. Christians? Oh, no. Nazarenes, follower of the Nazarene. Interesting. Jesus of Nazareth. Jesus said unto them, I am he. And Judas also, which betrayed him, stood with them. Now, as soon as he had said, I am he, they went backward and fell to the ground. I want you to understand this. I want you to, can you play this over in your mind? I've heard people talk about this and say, well, his fourth rightness is, so they kind of like, they were taken aback, literally, they stumbled over themselves and fell like so many dominoes. And these are people who always downplay his deity, his divinity. God steps forward, God the Son, and he says, who are you seeking? They said, Jesus of Nazareth. He doesn't say, I am he. You see this, right? You got a King James, red letters, or something like that. It says, I am, and the word is he is in italics. Very often, they put that italics there to help us understand. And very often, it gets in the way that doesn't help us understand. He doesn't say, I am he. He says, I am. This is the voice of the burning bush. This is I am that I am. This is the name he gave to Moses. This is, in Greek, it's ego I me. And it's the same thing that he sent Moses off. Oh, who should I say sent me? I am that I am. That's who sent you. It's the name. It's the yod hey, equivalent to the yod hey vav hey. He's been all through here saying, I am. I'm the bread of life. I'm the good shepherd. And this is the culmination of my thinking of all of that. I am. And what happens? The enemies of God at that name, every knee shall bow, or you're going to fall on the seat of your pants in this case and be very humiliated. I just love this. Who are you seeking? Jesus of Nazareth. They get some sass, don't they? They get some a little bit of arrogance there. Oh yeah? Well, I am. And they fall down like so many dominoes. I think this is wonderful. I think our God is awesome. I think he's, now, why does he do that? To humiliate them? Well, I think just a little bit, but to take control of the situation. Listen, I can I am you all night right out of the garden. If I wanted to escape, I am so able to escape. Anytime he doesn't want these proceedings to go on, he's all right, I've had enough of this, I'm out of here. He didn't. He never does. He's a man on a mission. And the mission is, think this all the way through. I'm not trying to get you to feel pity for him. I want you to be awed at his majesty. His mission is the redemption of you. And he's so focused on this. Nothing else. He's redeeming his disciples. Okay, who are you looking for? Jesus and Adam. Well, I am. And they all fall down. Now look at him. Look at what he's saying. He asks again, who's seeking? And they said, Jesus of Nazareth. Nazareth. Jesus says, I've told you that I am. Get rid of the he. If therefore you seek me, let these go their way. Okay, you're focusing on me. Well, let this be about me then. Go ahead. He steps up to the plate. I'm sure he puts his hands out in my thinking. Okay, you want to arrest me? Go ahead. Go on the handcuffs. So their version, it'd be ropes. I don't think they have handcuff technology, but maybe they do. I don't know. And go ahead. I'm ready. I'm okay with that. These, you're seeking me. These are out of here. And I think he's giving them the opportunity to, okay, boys, hit the bricks. That the saying might be fulfilled, which you spoke of them, which thou gavest me, I have lost none. Now, where is that in the Old Testament? It's not. If you have a gloss, it might say 17:12. John 17:12. Let's look at what that says. John 17:12. While I was with them in the world, I kept them in thy name. Those that thou gavest me, I have kept, and none of them is lost. But the son of perdition, that the scripture might be fulfilled. Did he lose you? Well, you have to figure that out. But the answer, my thinking, is no. 100% no. Here, and I'm just showing you, this is how he is. This is the great shepherd, shepherding his flock. He's not losing any. Then Simon Peter. Now, Simon Peter steps up to the plate because he had already said, I'm not denying you, Lord. I'm going to be with you even if it's all the way to death. Simon Peter, having a sword, drew it. And by the way, I think Simon Peter's working not from the Spirit here, obviously. The Spirit of God isn't leading Peter and trying to take off a guy's head. This is Peter being brave enough. I think his long suit is courage. I think he's courageous. I think this is where we'll fall very often, in a long suit. If you're like fearful all the time and you have fear in your life, well, let's say, I don't know, I can't come up with a really good example. I don't think we fall in our short suit when that temptation comes, you know, oh God, I've messed up so often here, save me, and we turn right to God and we ask for deliverance, he's right there to help us out. But like we're in our, what I say long suit, the thing that we're really capable, like, courage. I'm not a fearful man. I got this, Lord. I'm all set here. You know, we don't seek him because we trust in the flesh. And what happens? Mayhem. Ears being cut off. Nothing good. Simon Peter, having a sword, drew it and smote the high priest's servant, cut off his right ear. The servant's name was Malchus. This is the only gospel that names him, because I think this is written at the end of John's life. This may have been written after the book of Revelation. Peter, long since dead, been crucified at this point. You can't re-crucify him, so I don't think. And so now John's going to out him and tell, yeah, it was Peter who did that. Then said Jesus unto Peter, put up thy sword into thy sheath. The cup which my Father hath given me, shall I not drink it? It's put that sword away. You're misguided at best. This is why I came to earth. God's given me a cup. Shall I not drink it? I mean, then the man, the captain, the officer of Jesus took Jesus and bound him. Bound him because he's a desperately wicked criminal. And you got to tie up those hands because he might use them to heal somebody. Think about Jesus. How many times in his life is those hands balled up into a fist swinging at somebody? Never. He never sinned. He never got angry at somebody. He lost his cool and just went off on him. Ah, he said, well, wait a second. I remember a couple times he cleansed the temple. Yeah. Did he lose it? Just having a bad hair day and just lost his mind? No. It's Passover. You got to clean the yeast out of the house. Don't leaven. It has to go away. This is a Jewish boy cleaning the leaven out of his father's house. I would submit to you that's the most righteous thing. No sin involved in that, whatever. Here, they're tying up his hands, and you got to wonder, what are they thinking? Like his hands would stay tied if he didn't want them to? No, but he submits. This is deity submitting. Humbly. So much. They led him away to Annas first, for he was father-in-law to Caiaphas, which is the high priest of the same year. We can talk about this a lot. Caiaphas is the high priest. You don't have priests yearly, you have them for life. But they had, Jews had deposed Annas, who was Caiaphas' father-in-law. So Annas is the real high priest, and the Jews recognized him as such. Caiaphas, his little snot nose, happened to be his son-in-law. But so there's six trials, and not many people would know this or could name them, so I'll give them to you. Annas, Caiaphas, Sanhedrin, Pilate, Herod, and Pilate. Six kangaroo courts, and they're in that order. We're not given all of them in any of the Gospels. You have to kind of trace it out. So first, Annas. He went away to Annas. Now Caiaphas was he which gave counsel to the Jews that it was expedient that one should die for the people. Interesting to me. So he's prophesying as the high priest. By the way, he's right. One would die for the people, but that's not the way he meant it. It's expedient. It's good that one should, you know, instead of the whole nation going down with just one sacrificial lamb. It's logical and cold-blooded. Think about it all the way through. And by the way, logic isn't always the reason how we make decisions. Obedience to God is. And God is very often logical, but not always. Caiaphas, he prophesied, but I'm sure he didn't know he was doing it. But God recognized, even as the high priest, and he said what was true ultimately. And Simon Peter followed Jesus, so did another disciple. That disciple was known under the high priest and went in with Jesus under the place of the high priest. And most people think that's John. As a matter of fact, I do, and I've always believed that. Some people don't. Some people think it might be, because they're thinking, okay, he's this Galilean fisherman. How does he know the high priest? He's from the Galilee. How does he, like, he's a commoner. He's nothing. How would he know? I don't know if he sold fish to the high. I don't know. Some people think it's like Nicodemus or Joseph of Arimathea. But I don't know. I have always thought it was John. John teaches, you know, he doesn't name himself all through the gospel. That's one of his quirky things that he does. So they went in with Jesus in the palace of the high priest. Peter stood at the door without. Then went out that other disciple, which was known unto the high priest, and spake unto her that kept the door, and brought in Peter. Yeah, you can let him in too. It's kind of the idea, you know. Yeah, we know who this guy is, so he's fine. Then said the damsel that kept the door unto Peter, now art not thou also one of the man's disciples? He said unto her, he saith, I am not. How did he do that? Because, you know, he's already said, I'm not denying you. He just caught off guard. He wasn't expecting that. He just, you know, quick knee-jerk reaction. I think, you know, what happens, a quick knee-jerk reaction very often, it spills out as what we really think of who we really are. Now, we had time to think it all the way through. Maybe, you know, we pose, we put up the mask and act, you know, more spiritual than we actually are. I don't know. But I'm just thinking, wow, Pete, that was... I don't make so much of this. I don't know. You know, we say doubting Thomas. Thomas is great. And one time he has a doubt, and he voices it. And now we're going to know him, and we're going to put that name on him and name him for his worst day. And I don't think that's quite fair. I don't think it's quite fair on Peter. This is not good. And I want you to understand, it's not good. When you deny Jesus, it's not good. It's something that a man or woman ought not to do. Make up your mind right away. I want to let people know I'm a Christian early on in the process, as soon as possible. I don't want to be freakish or weird about it. Hi, I'm Adam the Christian. Don't be weird. But, you know, like at work, everyone knows I pastor a church. And people talk to me about this, and they even sometimes mild, not persecution, but they needle you. You know how guys are and stuff like that. I just want to always just like be right up front about and just not even, let's just get that out of the way right now. Oh, you want to take your shot? Well, go ahead. You know, that's fine. But I don't ever want to be in a place where, because, you know, most people think following Jesus, well, that's not cool. At least, you know, can we all agree that's not cool? What do you have, some sort of backward barbarian? You follow, you think the Bible's like the Word of God? What are you, some kind of troglodyte, cave-dwelling, knuckle-dragging? Yeah, I'm all those things. Whatever. Yeah, I follow Jesus Christ. I want you to know that right away. Just be done with it. Just get out there and let people know. Where am I? I'm not. I don't know what you're talking about. And the servants and officers stood there who had made a fire of coals, for it was cold, and they warmed themselves, and Peter stood with them and warmed himself. Now there's like whole things taught here. Peter followed afar off, he warmed himself in the enemy's fire. You can, all that stuff will preach and stuff. I don't want to highlight that. I mean, I know all those things and stuff, and there's things that, you know, stay away from, like following Jesus afar off and things like that, but he's trying to see what goes on. The high priest then asked Jesus of his disciples and of his doctrine. This is like, okay, what are you guilty of? It's kind of the idea here. You know, and Jesus says, I speak openly to the world. I ever taught in the synagogue and in the temple, whither the Jews always resort. And in secret have I said nothing. Whatever I've said, it's a matter of public record, okay, is the idea. And when he had thus spoken, one of the officers which stood by struck Jesus with the palm of the hand, saying, answer thou the high priest so? Jesus dignified a bad question with a good answer and still got struck for his efforts. Totally contrary to law. First, he wasn't supposed to be bound, not by Roman law, not by Jewish. He isn't convicted of anything. In our culture, we throw handcuffs on people for the safety of the officers, and I would think that's reasonable, okay? But here, they've already done something that was untoward. Now, here's another thing, and I just point this out, okay? You can't smack him. It's like, you know, if you were, like, flippant to the judge, and you shouldn't be. As a Christian, it's your honor, right? They don't come down and smack you. That's not to be done. Well, this culture, again, it's very high ideal, and here he gets smacked. And he says, Jesus answered him, if I have spoken evil, bear witness of the evil, but if well, why smitest me? Now, Annas had nothing to say to that and says nothing. because Jesus is correct and they are wrong. Now, Annas had sent him bound unto Caiaphas, the high priest. Okay, so that was trial one. And Simon Peter stood and warmed himself. They said therefore unto him, Art not thou also one of his disciples? And he denied it and said, I am not. One of the servants of the high priest, being his kinsman, whose ear Peter cut off, saith, Did not I see thee in the garden with him? Peter then denied again, and immediately the cock crew. Now it says in some of the other gospels, he denied him with curses and stuff. And people always get this wrong. They always think he cursed and he swore. He said, the curse is this. They don't have swear words in Israel. They still don't, okay? He said, if I know him, let me be accursed. That's calling down curses on yourself. And he just took it to the next level. He's not being potty mouth. He's saying, I'll be damned if I know him, in our vernacular. And meaning damned, not, damned if I know him. No, I'll be condemned to hell if I know him, is what he's saying. He's calling down a curse on himself. And here, that's not mentioned specifically. Peter then denied again, immediately the cock crew. Incredible. Incredible. I feel sorry for Peter. I feel sorry for you and for me when we do this. We should not do. We do it in more subtle ways. Somebody's on the news and they get some microphone in front of them and they are one of your brothers and sisters, and they say they do not know how to navigate the news, and they say stupid and untoward things, and we want to separate ourselves from that person because they look like a rube and they make us look like a rube. Fine. You don't have to be a rube, and you don't have to say, he's my brother, I'm standing with him, when you shouldn't be talking like that. We can separate ourselves from somebody who's saying something wrong and say, well, I wouldn't put it that way, and say, but don't separate yourself from Jesus. Because there, the world is saying, oh, see what Christians are like? Look at that guy. What a diarrhea of the mouth. He doesn't know what he's talking about. And it could be hateful, and it could be absolute real hate speech, and he could be saying some things that are alarming and bad. And we don't want to associate ourselves with that, right? But don't throw the baby out with the bathwater. Don't walk away from Jesus. Just point out why that person isn't representing well. Okay, keep moving. Jesus will forgive Peter. And in the Gospel of Luke, it's very interesting to me here, after the cock crows and Peter denied him three times, Jesus turned and looked at Peter. And I always bring up, like, okay, this is the Jesus movie, and you're the director. And the actor who's playing Jesus says, okay, I'm looking at him, what's my motivation here? What am I looking at him, like, utter disgust, like, yeah, punk. I knew you'd punk out on me. Thanks for stabbing me in the back. What's the motivation here? And by the way, your answer doesn't tell me anything about Jesus. It might reveal a lot about you. I think Jesus is already, the healing is already beginning. The forgiveness is already in his eyes. I knew Peter. I know, right? It's hard. Don't worry. I'll get circled back around with you. We'll clear this up. Because that's who Jesus is. That's who we are. We don't know the look. We don't know. I'm submitting to you. And it's a hypothesis I've been working on. Jesus is the Savior. He loves. He's reconciling us to God. He's never the, oh yeah, Mr. I will never deny you. Oh, now look at you now. Is he like that to you? Because he's not like that in reality. He's just so not. Is he disappointed? He's not yet. Almost in disappointment, you almost have, there's an element of surprise there. He's not surprised. Does he hate Peter? Ridiculous. He's going to the cross for Peter. for you, for me, the ones who have denied Jesus. Then led they Jesus from Caiaphas' hall unto the hall of judgment, was early, and they themselves went not into the judgment hall, lest they should be defiled, but that they might eat the Passover. This is the height of all hypocrisy. John's bringing it to our attention. I'm not going into the judgment hall because I want to eat the Passover. Oh, I want to railroad an innocent man, the Christ, the creator of the universe. I want to make an innocent man suffer and die cruelly on a Roman cross, but I don't want to get defiled. Listen, religion is full of this. Why do you think I speak against religion every opportunity I get? You talk about straining at a gnat and swallowing a camel. Listen, I don't want to get defiled. I want to keep the Passover. But I want to railroad this Jesus guy. I don't want to make sure he dies horribly. He called me a whitewashed sepulcher. How dare him? You see the utter hypocrisy here? It's stark. And it's incredible. Pilate then went out unto them and said, what accusation bring ye against this man? Pilate here, all business. Okay, let's get to the bottom of this. And he goes out, he accommodates them. What accusation bring ye against this man? They answered and said to him, if he were not a malefactor, we would not have delivered him up unto thee. What kind of answer is that? What is he guilty of? He's a bad guy. I mean, if he wasn't, why would he be here? Now, I'm Pilate, just for a second. I don't like Pilate at all. And I don't like to imagine myself him. I'm Pilate, and I can answer like that? Case dismissed. You're free. Just be snotty at me. Who do you think I am? I ain't got time for you and your arrogance. And this is an arrogant answer. I can't make anything else out of this. If you were not a malefactor, we would not have delivered him up unto thee. Then said Pilate unto them, take ye and judge him yourself according to your law. The Jews therefore said unto him, it is not lawful for us to put any man to death. It hadn't been. It was the procurator Caponius in, I think it's AD 4, 5, 6, somewhere in there. And they had taken away the right of the Jews to adjudicate and have capital punishment. It was a big deal because the Jews thought that the Torah had been broken. You remember the prophecy where Jacob says to Jacob says to Judah that the scepter shall not depart from Judah until Shiloh come. It means to him to whom it belongs, the scepter. He's prophesying Judah's going to, the lawgiver will come from Judah. And so they thought that, okay, the scepter has departed and the Christ still hasn't come. They understood it as messianic prophecy. And they were very upset. History tells them, they marched to the seat saying the Torah's been broken. They should just cool their jets down in Nazareth in the carpenter shop. There's a little boy growing up and the scepter had not departed from Judah. I don't want to develop that any more than that. You can search that out. It's a wonderful study in and of itself. But they couldn't do the death penalty. When they did that with Stephen, I don't know, heads rolled and they got in a lot of trouble about it because they kind of were so upset that they just put that aside. But here they're following Roman law. And if they put him to death, he would have been stoned. But there's much scripture on him being crucified to where Psalm 22, we read that when we have communion very often. They will look upon me whom they have pierced, Zechariah, things of this nature. Go ahead and judge him. If he's a malefactor, a bad guy, you're going to take him and judge him according to your law. It's not lawful for us to put him in death. The saying of Jesus might be fulfilled, which he spoke, signifying what death he should die. If they're going to put him to Roman death, that means crucifixion. Pilate entered the judgment hall again, called Jesus, and said, art thou the king of the Jews? Jesus answered, sayest thou the thing of thyself, or did others tell it of thee? I got to understand where this question is coming from, because if you're asking, what are you asking is the basic. You know how some people ask the wrong question, you got to put it in the right context to answer it correctly. And Jesus wants to answer this question. What are you asking? Do I have a band of men, an army outside that are going to overthrow Rome? The answer is no. Am I the king of the universe, the Messiah? Well, the answer is yes. You know what I mean? So what are you saying? What are you asking? Sayest thou this thing of thyself, or did others tell of me? Pilate answered, Am I a Jew? Thine own nation, the chief priest said, Deliver thee unto me. What have you done? Again, it's back to that kangaroo court. What have you done? What are you guilty of, right? No, you tell me. I'm the accused. If you've got something, now's the time to bring out your evidence. This is Jewish jurisprudence, and it's Roman jurisprudence. You have to convict me. I don't have to convict myself. In America, too, we have that same thing, right? Innocent until proven guilty. We didn't invent that. I'm glad we have that. At least as a standard. It hasn't always worked. I understand that. You can say, you know, Adam, innocent people have been put to death here in America. I understand. Sometimes we have a really good system that we don't put into practice. I totally get that. And we've spoken against that on several times. But the methodology, not the methodology, the way we go about it, you're innocent until we, the people, prove you to be guilty of something. We don't just take you in, beat you up, rough you up, and say, okay, what have you done? He's doing the same thing. So Jesus answers them, My kingdom, let me lay this out for you, Pat. My kingdom is not of this world. So you're worried about some, you know, insurrection or something? That's not on my agenda. Resurrection is on my agenda, but insurrection is not on my agenda. My kingdom is not of this world. If my kingdom were of this world, then would my servants fight that I should not be delivered to the Jews. But now is my kingdom not from hence. You get it, Pat? You got nothing to worry about. You're in a clinic. And Pilate therefore said to them, Art thou a king then? I think this is a little flippant. Jesus answered, Thou sayest that I am a king. Now, listen to me. It's not, oh yeah, well, that's what you say. He's not saying that. It's a grave question that demands more than an answer of yup. Okay? It's as you say. Is the way we would interpret it. He's answering in the affirmative. He's gravely answering a grave question. Thou sayest that I am a king. It's as you say, is another word, way of saying it. To this end was I born, and for this cause came I into the world, that I should bear witness unto the truth. Everyone that is of the truth heareth my voice. Does Jesus know he's going to get this cynical response? Yes, he does. Nothing surprising Jesus here. He's in control from the moment, well, the moment of his birth, if you ask me, but the moment he comes out and he says, okay, who are you looking for? It's all playing out the way Jesus wants it to play out. Is he a victim? Yes, willingly so. He lets himself be a victim. He's controlling it. Hey, we're not gonna arrest them on the feast day. There'll be an uproar. When they arrest them? On the feast day. Jesus is driving. Jesus is in control. He's not gonna get a guiltless verdict. I remember preaching on this before, and every time Pilate says to him, I find no fault in him, like in the university, I'd say, well, then let him go. And I think, like, that's me as a younger man thinking, this is so unjust. But as an older man, I think, like, it is so unjust. And that's how it has to be. You can't justly deliver a sinless man to be crucified, and yet he has to be crucified. It has to be unjust. Right? And this is it, playing out. And Jesus is in control. And remember, think about this. And I want you to think about this. I don't even think, oh, poor Jesus, he's in such a pickle now. Think about this. It's all about you. It's all about your redemption. It's all about God's love for you. Anytime, he's never powerless. He's never not God. Anytime, he could have said, all right, I've had a belly full of this. I'm out of here. He could have Remember, they all fell over backwards when he said, I am he. They could have all fallen over backwards, turned to worms, and he could have plowed them into the soil. He could. There's a number of anything he could do. And what is he doing? He's playing out, acting out, doing what his father has prescribed that he do. Yeah, I came into the world, and I bear witness to the truth. Everyone that is of the truth heareth my voice. Isn't that wonderful? I wish we could develop that for a long, long time. Here's the truth. Hey, you understand? You get this? Are you dialing in what I'm saying? Well, guess what? You're of the truth. You hear my voice, you're of the truth. Everyone of the truth heareth my voice. I said before, you know, I say to them, you know, God said to me, and people look at me, is God talking to you? You too, right? I'm hoping. Have you ever heard the voice of God where he said, haven't you had the resonance of something like this and saying, yeah, I see it. It's a spirit of truth. You're not that bright. I'm not that bright. We're not that, like, so super sophisticated. I can always spot error and I can always spot truth. Or is it the spirit of truth? Bearing witness to our spirit. This is reliable. This is what you need to believe in. And here it is. Everyone that is of the truth heareth my voice. Pilate said, then what is truth? Oh, that is cynicism. That is, hey, America, what is truth? Oh, you mean your truth. Yeah, inside, you know, you have your truth, I have my truth, and it's kind of a, you know, it's a anybody's. I know. And real truth? It's new hate speech. Don't say anything that's true, my goodness, we'll ban you from whatever platform you're on. Pilate saith him, what is truth? And when he had said this again, he went out again into the Jews and saith unto them, I find no fault at all. By the way, again, case dismissed. No, for a lot of reasons. But he's spineless, is he not? He's spineless. I got to go through the motion here anyway. We have a custom that I should release unto you one at the Passover. Will ye therefore that I release unto you the King of the Jews? Then cried they all again unto us, not this man, but Barabbas. Now Barabbas was a robber. That's how the chapter ends. Barabbas is a very interesting character. Now you know enough Hebrew, Bar, son, Abba, father. He's the son of a father. How nondescript is that? Why? Well, it happens to be his name, I'm sure. What's it all about? Well, I think son of a father, I think you could put your name right in there. I think you could fit right into this creature's shoes. He's a bad guy. There's a cross set up for him. He's going to die today, badly, because he's a bad guy. He doesn't die. Jesus dies in his place. Substitution. Now, I don't think I have to develop this to the nth degree. I think we all get it. Yeah, there's a cross with my name on it. And I'm never, ever going to experience the wages of sin is death. And here I am, thoroughly alive. Thank you, Jesus.